each year in Parshas Bahar, I think every single year that I speak in Parshas Bahar, I speak about the same Rashi, and I bet I'm not the only rabbi that does this, because there's a very, very prominent Rashi in the beginning of Parshas Bahar. Of course, the beginning of Parshas Bahar discusses the laws of Shemitah, Yovel. So you would expect the Rashi would have something to do with Shemitah, but it doesn't really. It has to do with the phrase Bahar Sinai, that the Torah goes out of its way to tell us that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us this set of rules, this set of halachos, Bahar Sinai. So Rashi raises the question, Ma'inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai. Every year in Shul, I say over the same story. One of my balabatim called me out on it already, so I'm not allowed to say it anymore, but I can say it here, that Rabbi Kenny Hain told me, he was once traveling, you've heard it from me too. Okay, so should I not say it? I can say it. That he was once traveling in Israel and he was watching television. You've heard it from me too? I said it here, okay. So, and he was watching an episode of MacGyver and he saw that he was reading the subtitles. And when the phrase came on the television show, what does it have to do with anything? The subtitle said, Ma'inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai. And he said, wow, how the Torah has permeated all of Israeli culture to the point that when you watch an old episode of MacGyver, you can Google it, find out what MacGyver is, that's what would come to mind. So Rashi asked that question. Everything was given at Har Sinai. So why does it mention Shemitah? And why is it that Dafka during the presentation of the laws of Shemitah, we need to be told that this is given in Har Sinai? So Rashi gives the famous non-answer. Elama Shemitah Nemru Kloloseha Upratoseha V'tiktukeha Misinai Avkula Nemru Kloloseyan V'tiktukeha Misinai. Rashi says Shemitah is not an exception, it is a paradigm. That instead of saying that Shemitah is different than everything else, and that's why it highlights that it was given in Har Sinai, no, Shemitah is the paradigm. Just like all the details of the halachos of Shemitah were given in Har Sinai, so too every single mitzvah, which all the Achronim are bothered, doesn't really answer the question. The question remains just as strong. Great, it's a paradigm. Why is it a paradigm? If every mitzvah, kloloseha, pratoseha, v'tiktukeha, were given at Har Sinai, why would Shemitah be the one chosen? I mean, if you had to pick one mitzvah that would serve as a paradigm mitzvah, as a mitzvah that's, I don't know, the most important mitzvah, you would probably choose, I don't know, what would you choose? Shabbos, okay, if you're in the Bein Adam L'Makom realm, or you choose V'Avta L'Reicha Kamocha in the Bein Adam L'Chaveru realm, or maybe you would choose Emunah B'Hashem if you hold that that's a mitzvah, okay, Machlokes Rishonim, or maybe the first mitzvah of Pru Revu, maybe the last mitzvah, Ksiva Sefer Torah, Shemitah, mitzvah number 326, is chosen as the mitzvah that somehow is the paradigm of every mitzvah. Why? So Rashi leaves that unresolved. That's question number one. Question number two. This is a Rashi I speak about every year, but I only recently noticed this very fundamental problem in a Rashi. Rashi says that just like Shemitah was given Kloloseha, what does Kloloseha mean? It's general, right? General presentation of it, the general rules. Pratoseha, details. V'diktukeha. Sounds a lot like pratoseha, right? Diktukeha. What's diktuk? So, no, it's diktuk. Grammar. Okay, but not its grammar, right? I spoke in a girls' high school yesterday morning, and I said, I was saying this to Bartor, I said, what's diktukeha? And the girl said, grammar. So the grammar of Shemitah was, it's true, diktuk is grammar. I've told you that story. Someone came to Rav Moshe complaining that everyone is not from these days because they don't learn enough diktuk, and it's diktuk this and diktuk that, and that's why kids go off to the derech, and that's why people drink, and that's why, like, he was blaming all the world's problems, that's why there's homelessness, and that's why, they, you know, because it's all because of diktuk. And Rav Moshe waited till the man finished his tirade, and he said, I think it's diktuk, right? what does diktukeha mean? Diktukeha just means pratoseha. It's just another word. It's a fancy word for pratoseha. So what exactly is the difference between the two? Obviously, it doesn't mean the same thing. It obviously has to have some separate mashmaos. And a third question, because we always like three questions. And this may sound strange. It may sound like I'm an apikoros for asking this. But what difference does it make if it was given at Har Sinai? You know, let's say I told you that only Kloloseha were given at Har Sinai, and Pratoseha v'Tiktukeha were given at Arvos Moed, Oel Moed, I don't know, somewhere else, a day later, by God, to Moshe, to the Jewish people, right? Same system. but not in that location, different location. Would that like shatter our emuna? You know, would that like change anything? Why is it so important to know that it was given dafka v'har Sinai? So again, three questions. One, Rashi never answered the question. Why is it that Shemitah is the paradigm? Question number two, what is the difference between prateha v'tiktokeha? And question number three, why is it so important to know that it was given at Har Sinai? Rav Nissen Alpert, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, in his Limudei Nisan, points out that what makes the Har Sinai experience so unique was that Har Sinai was exciting. It was a spectacle. It was an experience that nobody could forget. Roim es hakolos, you know, to see the kolos, whatever that means, it sounds exciting. You know, that it's the kind of thing you would count up to. And in life in general, we count up to things or we count toward things, and we need to in order to reinvigorate ourselves. And I'm reading a book now very slowly, so I'm still reading it. It's called, the title of the book is When. Did I tell you about this? Okay, something I haven't told you about yet. So the most of these like psychology and self-help books are all about how to do this better, how to do that better. The yisod of this book is that it's not about how, or maybe it is partially about how, but it's also about timing, about when. When is your mind most creative? When is your mind most focused? And when you understand that, when you understand the importance of timing and how we react to timing in life, you can be much more productive. It's a very fascinating episode. And one of the things that he highlights, he has a whole chapter about, is how all the research seems to show that we do well at the beginning of Zman and at the end of Zman. Whatever, it doesn't use the term Zman, obviously, but when we're at the beginning of something new and when it's about to finish. You know, if you're running a race, if you're running a long race, so you can come strong out of the gate, then there will be a lull, and then when you know that there's only 100 yards left, you'll run. You know, you'll go with much greater energy, and you'll go much faster. So it is important to have these things to look forward to in life, and that's probably the way most of us operate. You know, when's the Shabbaton? When do finals start? When do finals end? When do I go away for the summer? When do, you know, and that way you have, you know, you set these benchmarks. Har Sinai was the ultimate benchmark. I mean, that was like, okay, 49 days, this is it. And it was this incredible experience. Parcha Nishmasan, you know, can you imagine what that? Our job with every single mitzvah we do, and it's a daunting task, is to observe them in the same way that we observed them when we got them at Har Sinai. Meaning, to have a Har Sinai experience with each mitzvah. To be excited about each mitzvah. You know, the pasuk, Vahayu advarim e'ela asher anochi mitzavcha hayom. What does Chazal tell us? That each mitzvah, you should view it as if mitzavcha hayom, as if today it was given to you, as if it were still new. I remember when I was in elementary school, I went to an elementary school where the minhag was that when a boy would put on tefillin for the first time, they would take this old metal cart around and they would put donuts and orange juice and, at that time, you see old and scotch on the cart, and you'd push it around to each classroom so every rebbe can make a l'chaim. It's like scandalous if you think about it, like all these elementary school rebbeim drinking on the job. So everyone making a l'chaim with you and giving you brachos, and you could take like three or four of your closest friends to miss the entire morning of shir so that you can go around to every classroom and get brachos from all the rebbeim. So it was like a very exciting time, and if you were popular, you got to be chosen by a lot of people, and you didn't have to learn for like a whole year. So one of the things, my sixth grade rebbe, every single boy that came, he gave the same bracha to. His bracha was always that you should put on tefillin every single day with the same excitement that you put on tefillin today. That was his bracha. Now, we don't really track batting averages on brachos, but I would bet it's a pretty low one on that. You know, how many of the boys put on tefillin with the same excitement every single day that they did? That's the mitzavcha hayom. That's the requirement. But how many of us actually do it? It's a very, very hard thing to really internalize. You know, a child takes his first steps and the parents cheer him wildly as if like it's a great, he feels like the biggest man in the world. That feeling obviously is short-lived. No one's cheering you when you you know, when you pace around the base medrash or something. No one's like, wow, steps, you know, fantastic. But because we get used to things, you know, things we stop appreciating certain brachos after a certain amount of time. In fact, that's why the Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Ayin, the Gemara tells us kashim gerim li Yisrael kisapachas, that gerim are bad for the Jewish people. They're like a thorn in the side of the Jewish people. So in Tosfos quotes Rav Avraham Ager, that gerim who didn't grow up with mitzvos view them as very exciting, and they're therefore much more meticulous in the performance of mitzvos. So their care and the precision for something that's new to them reflects poorly on the rest of us, because we're all supposed to have that attitude toward mitzvos, but we don't all have that attitude toward mitzvahs. You know, if I were to, even, it's, and it's not that we don't think that mitzvahs are important. I would bet that if I were to ask you, do you believe that mitzvahs are the most important thing to do in your life, to do each and every day, you would probably say, yes, of course mitzvahs are important. It's like physically, food is very important. We would all acknowledge food is very important. But I don't know, I grew up, you're a different generation than me. I'm a grandchild of Holocaust survivors, right? So growing up, when my grandparents were around, If after dinner, you know, I tried to push the broccoli into the garbage, you know, when Ima wasn't looking, because I wasn't interested in eating the broccoli, like, my grandparents couldn't handle that. They couldn't see food be thrown in there. They just couldn't, because when you go through years of starving, so it's just a different appreciation. It's a different attitude. So, well, of course, I believe food is important, because you die without it. But it's just not the same. It's hard to have that same appreciation. And this is the avoda when it comes to mitzvos. So what's the best way to predict whether a mitzvah will feel exciting or not? You know, let me ask you a question. What are you more excited for in general? Shabbos or Pesach?
Pesach.
Why? It's once a year. It comes less frequently. That which comes, who are you more excited to see usually? Your parents or your grandparents? Usually your grandparents. Why? Because your parents live with you, so it's less exciting. But grandparents, it was a treat that they would when they would come. Now you know that your parents were more important in your day to day living, in your life in general, were a greater influence on your life than your grandparents are or were. But it's just, that's the nature of that's human nature, that we, that which is common, we tend to get less excited about, and that which comes less frequently, we get much more excited about. If you had to think of a mitzvah that comes up the least frequently, what mitzvah is that? So Shabbos comes every week, Pesach comes every year, most mitzvahs come at least every year, if not every day. Yovel. Right? In fact, there's an expression. It's once in a Yovel. That's a way of saying it never happens. Because Yovel is once every 50 years. And next on the list would be Shemitah. I guess Birchas HaChama somewhere in between. I know a guy who rented a plane on the day of Birchas HaChama because he decided he was going to make Birchas HaChama his mitzvah. He was afraid of a cloudy day. He said, you know, like they say you're supposed to, the Bali Musa say you're supposed to have one mitzvah that's yours. He said, I'll take the one that only happens once every 28 years. So he rented a plane for Birchas HaChama. So it's exciting. Every time Birchas HaChama happens, books are written. Several books are written about Birchas HaChama, which means people have dedicated the years prior to Birchas HaChama studying Birchas HaChama. Why? What's the big deal? It's a bracha. You say 100 of them every day, hopefully, because you're required to. So what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is that it happens once in a very long time. And therefore, Shemitah and Yovel are paradigms. They're paradigms because of their infrequency. That's what makes them these great examples of Chaloseh, Protoseh, V'tiktukeh, B'sinai. But how? How do we do it? How do we inspire ourselves to feel that way about mitzvah? So Rashi gives two bits of advice that you should realize, Prateha V'tiktukeh. We often look at the Kaloseha. We look at just, you know, the fact that there is a mitzvah to do, so, you know, check it off on the list, I've done it. But there's prateha v'diktukeha. The pratim are the details, the layers of the mitzvah, the richness of the mitzvah. Something that can seem like a simple act can be done in a more meaningful way each and every day if you pay careful attention to its details. You daven every single day. Now, depending on what you're going through in life, you might energize a certain bracha of your tefillah because of if Rachman al Tzlan, the easiest example to choose, if Rachman al Tzlan someone is sick, it energizes the bracha of Rifa'enu. It's a different kind of tefillah. You know, and that's the goal, is to energize the tefillah, to not just tefillah, but all of our mitzvahs, to put some energy into the mitzvahs, to feel that the mitzvahs are alive, that it's Hayom, that it's Bahar Sinai, to feel, you know, I was always bothered that by the campaign, I think I've mentioned this to you, it was like a major campaign, stop the talking in shul, that there shouldn't be any talking in shul, and like, I almost got the impression that people would like, if to walk into shul, that it should sound like a library. It's not the way a shul is supposed to sound. A shul should not sound like a library. You have to talk in shul to the Ribbono Shel Olam. But what I mean by talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam, you walk into a shul, you should hear that beautiful hum of tefillah, the sound of a bunch of people davening, not screaming at the top of their lungs, but davening audibly enough, like the halacha says you're supposed to, psuke de zimra, with a certain zemer, that, you know, and you just hear like this mesh of voices together in genuine avodas Hashem. It's alive, it's energizing. That's what tefillah is supposed to be. To not allow it to get old, and the way to not allow it to get old is by finding deeper meaning, by learning the same Rashi, Bahar Sinai, every single year, and finding another message, putting a little bit more into it, having greater appreciation of it. But then there's Diktu Keha. Diktu Keha are not the details of the mitzvah. One can suggest that Diktu Keha means the idea and the message of the mitzvah. To achieve an understanding of the mitzvah, the reasoning of the mitzvah, the meaning of the mitzvah. And perhaps if we properly assess the meaning and value of a mitzvah, we will not grow bored with the mitzvah. One time on NCSY Kolo, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zichrono Levracha, was asked in the question and answer session, someone asked him, you know, it's always awkward when people haven't submitted questions in advance, so they haven't vetted the questions. So, you know, it's like they just open up the questions to, like, you know, kids, ask whatever you want. So it's always a little risky. My brother-in-law was telling me last night when Mori Rabbi Rav Shechter was in Boca Raton, Rabbi Goldberg said, and Rav Shechter was kind enough to take some time for questions. And they didn't vet any questions. And no one was asking anything until one guy raised his hand and said, I kid you not, what does the Rosh Yeshiva read in the Beis HaKiseh? That was his question. So now, that guy who asked that question, it's a great question, it happens to be, but that guy said that his minhag is he asks all Gedolei Yisrael that question. Meaning, it sounds disrespectful, and probably many Gedolei Yisrael refuse to answer it. But if you think about it, it's saying, like, when you can't do what you most love to do, what do you do, right? So that's a different way of phrasing the question. Maybe to say, like, what do you do on Tisha B'Av? You know, like, maybe there's another way to say it. What would you do if you find yourself in the Mokum Matuna? You know, not make it so personal when you're on the basic. Okay, but that's the question. So they opened up the floor, the question is asked to Rav Lichtenstein, and this kid raised his hand and said, what should you do if Torah is boring? And Rav Lichtenstein, like, was confused by the question. He was not an easy man to confuse, but Torah is boring. Like, he couldn't. It seemed like he never had that experience. And he said that maybe the way to think about it when you're thinking, oh, Torah is so boring, you should think, oh, the divine word of God and in manual for life, for all of humanity, for all time, is boring. And then you see how ridiculous he sounds. And what he's trying to say is that if you appreciate what it is, if you just pay attention to what it means, what its value is. So yeah, food, as the example I gave before, we all understand intellectually that food is very important. We'd probably treat it with more respect when our grandparents were around who didn't have it, because we then appreciate how valuable it is, and we're focused on that appreciation. So it's about asserting a certain amount of kavana to the value and meaning. If you take Shemitah as an example, so a person can check the box on Shemitah. I observed Shemitah with all of its prateha, with all of its details, by leaving my field and by treating anything that has Kedusha Shvius with the proper level of Kedusha. You could do all of that, but you still might be missing Diktu Keha if you don't appreciate the message of Bitachon that within Shemitah, the message of being concerned for the welfare of others. That's clear in the halacha of Shemitah. A mitzvah that seems like a great challenge, all of a sudden can become like a blueprint to how to live your life. that it's all about trusting in the Ribbono Shel Olam and being there for other people and caring for other people and appreciating that there's a sense of equality. It changes everything when you just appreciate that's what it is. We once had in DRS a convert came to speak to one of the classes, one of what we used to call in DRS, one of the more Lebedev classes, which was code word for like insane and it's a miracle that the Rebbe survived, you know, kind of class. So one of the kids said, kid raised his head and said, why do you want to take on Shabbos with all these restrictions? And he said, no, not restrictions, opportunities, all these opportunities. So that's the way to, if we view it in that way, we'll energize ourselves. So it turns out that Rashi is teaching us something so deeply profound and important. If you want every mitzvah to be Bahar Sinai, to feel like a Shemitah and a Yovel, something that you can look forward to, generate excitement for, make sure to be careful about its pratim and dikdukim. And this is most critical as we approach Zman Matan Torah, which is literally a time that we count toward, that we have a mitzvah to count toward, that we focus ourselves on Talmud Torah in this way. We've had times in our lives where Talmud Torah was exciting for us. Most of us, if you're here at this point, there must have been times in your lives where you feel energized by Talmud Torah, but it's natural that there be some lulls along the way. The pratim dikdukim might slip a little bit. We convince ourselves that waking up early to learn on time or staying up to learn a night seder, I could hear the shir online, whether I will or not, but I could. We convince ourselves, we can make it up later, and the pratim slip and the dikdukim slip, and we forget the meaning of Talmud Torah. And I always found it so unfortunate that finals always comes out right around Shavuos. It's like it's the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara has a way of challenging us, and I think this is a challenge to make sure, as the Rashiva always points out, that even as our schedules get tighter and get more challenging, you should realize that it's not going to get easier later in life. You may feel a lot of pressure from school. At some point, you're going to look back and say, I thought that was pressure. Now I have to, feed a family. There's, little people that rely on me. That's a much greater form of pressure. And if we can practice over here, that's something we can carry forward in the rest of our lives and show that we can appreciate every day as a Har Sinai experience. Okay.